From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the governor's administration faces greater scrutiny over handling of the water crisis in Hoosick Falls. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the continuing investigations into the governor's top aides. And thousands of more low-income New Yorkers are now eligible for SNAP benefits. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration is facing greater scrutiny over handling of the Hoosick Falls water crisis. A congressional committee recently opened an inquiry, and both the state assembly and Senate will hold hearings. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Senator Kathy Marchione, whose district includes the village of Hoosick Falls, is the latest to open an inquiry into the handling of the water crisis amid allegations that the Cuomo administration knew the water was contaminated with the chemical PFOA, but delayed telling residents for over a year.
The Senate is going to be holding hearings. The first one will be held here in Hoosick Falls.
Marchione had resisted holding the hearings for months, saying they would only lead to finger-pointing. She's been heavily criticized on social media. Her announcement came after U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand held a listening session at the Hoosick Falls High School. There, residents spoke emotionally about the high levels of the toxic chemical, which was used in the manufacture of Teflon products by a nearby plant and was found in their blood. Michael Hickey was one of the first to become concerned when his father died of a rare kidney cancer linked to PFOA. Now he worries about his son, who is growing up in the village.
I started as a heartbroken son, and it changed for me to become a scared father.
The residents are also angry about the way they were informed of the levels of the toxin in their blood. The state health department mailed the test results on a Friday, so many arrived over the weekend. Recipients say they were offered little support when they received the devastating news, something the health department denies. Perhaps the most consequential inquiry, though, is one begun by the Congressional Oversight Committee. It's demanding the Cuomo administration hand over all documents and communications related to Hoosick Falls and PFOA from May 2014 on. In a letter, the committee cites other documents that show health department officials knew of the potential contamination for over a year, but did not tell residents that they might be in danger. The committee says the sluggish response raises serious questions and caused residents to remain exposed to dangerous levels of PFOA.
That, I think, is nothing short of a bombshell.
Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin represents Hoosick Falls in the Assembly. He's been calling for more scrutiny. And McLaughlin, a former commercial airline pilot, says he's pleased that the Democratic-led state assembly has now agreed to hold hearings, bringing the number of inquiries to three.
When an airplane crashes, we don't just say, let's move forward, right? We break that whole accident down and we analyze it so that it doesn't happen again.
A spokesman for Governor Cuomo, James Allen, responding to the letter from the Federal Oversight Committee, says the administration will gladly share their experience, but shifted some of the blame to the EPA, saying there were shifting guidelines and absence of regulation. Governor Cuomo, asked about the committee's requests during a recent trip to Utica, focused on all of the actions he's taken since January of this year. That's when he declared parts of the village a state Superfund site, began actions against the potentially responsible company, St. Joe Bain, and installed water filters.
So I can't think of what else we could possibly do.
The first hearings, held by the state Senate, will begin in August. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, you spoke with Ken Lovett, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, and you began with an analogy with Governor Cuomo standing in a circle.
Well, that's right, David. Cuomo doesn't seem affected by it. And yet, you know, here's a guy who comes into office. He campaigns against corruption. Now, it turns out that his closest advisors, and I do mean his closest advisors, no matter what he says, the people he's been relying on are under investigation right around him. He stands in the middle, but the people who have been his closest advisors are facing major accusations. We hear it from the U.S. attorney. We hear it from the subpoenas that have been offered. And it is, to me, trouble for the governor because, you know, again, he has campaigned on bringing change to Albany, and he has failed to produce that not only in terms of good new laws, strength and ethics laws, but also he has failed to produce it in terms of his own gang.
From there to the fact that the conventions are coming up and we have two New Yorkers in the race for president.
We do. One of those New Yorkers is not going to carry New York, and that's Donald Trump. He will not carry New York. Hillary Clinton will. And no matter what happens in the general election, and let there be no mistake about it, the general election is very close. Most pundits are now saying too close to call. But I do think that what will happen is that Hillary will carry New York big time. And because people come out to vote for her, because it's going to be a close race, that's when people come out. You're going to find a lot of people down ballot on the Democratic side benefiting from all of this.
Governor Cuomo's administration, as our Karen DeWitt reports this week, Alan, is facing greater scrutiny over the handling of the Hoosick Falls water crisis. In the last week, a congressional committee opened an inquiry, and both the state assembly and Senate will hold hearings now.
Yes, David, as always, the question is, what did you know, Governor, and when did you know it? Have you been sitting on information that the water is poisoned? And if, in fact, you have, that's going to be the issue. It isn't going to be, did you do anything about it eventually? It's going to be, how long did you know about it and whether or not you could have done something earlier? And that's probably why the governor, I think, must be a little nervous around this time.
The New York State Senate and the issue of the coming presidential election, what will happen?
Well, as I said before, David, down ballot is going to be very important. Let's parse it this way. You are going to see a very close presidential election. That's going to mean in each state, a lot of people will come out to vote. Now, we know there are key states. Ohio is one of them, and Pennsylvania and Florida. But New York State is going to go solidly Democratic, is going to go for Hillary Clinton, who is going to be their favorite daughter. And when people show up to vote for Hillary, they're going to take a look at this list of other offices down the line. We call that down ballot. They are going to say, I don't know these people, but I came to vote for Hillary. She's a Democrat. I'll vote for other Democrats. We know that that happens in presidential elections. It's going to happen this time. And it may well be enough votes to carry, for example, the New York State Senate into the Democratic ranks. Now, the Republicans and the governor have a way of picking off errant Democrats to vote with the Republicans. There are many Democrats who think that this is nothing but a terrible betrayal of the Democratic ethic, large D Democratic ethic. And people, the remaining Democrats in the state Senate are furious at the Gang of Five, and some call them the traitors, who have made, for whatever reason they want, peace with the Republicans. They get committee chairmanships. They may get some extra money as a result of it. But so far, they've been getting away with it. There are many people who feel that the day that the governor turns around to these guys under the leader of this group, Senator Jeff Klein, and says, you get back where you belong, that they'll have no choice. Because if a governor goes into a district during a primary campaign and says, these guys betrayed the Democrats, they would be in sad shape. As it is, they get away with it. The governor is thought to be at least compliant with them about it, because the general feeling among political pundits is the governor wants a Republican state Senate like his papa Mario did.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Under new policies that went into effect this month, thousands more low-income New Yorkers are now eligible for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP benefits. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Back in January, in his State of the State address, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that SNAP eligibility would be expanded to more working households. As of July 1st, working households earning up to 150% of the poverty level can now participate. Anthony Farmer, spokesman for the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance, says that's about $2,500 a month for a family of three.
This is going to ensure that, you know, working families can move on to a better paying job or maybe earn a pay raise at work and not have to worry about losing their SNAP benefits as they work towards becoming self-sufficient.
Almost 3 million New Yorkers already receive supplemental nutritional assistance. The expansion means the state will receive $688 million in additional federal SNAP benefits each year. Susan Zimmet is executive director of Hunger Action Network of New York State.
By increasing the income eligibility to 150%, which is allowed to be done state by state, included another 750,000 households, which means it's over probably a couple of million people that will now be able to benefit from the SNAP benefits, what used to be called food stamps, which is really, really fantastic because it's not going to cost the state taxpayers any more money. We're just taking advantage and benefiting from the federal government program.
Cuomo says it is unacceptable for New York to allow anyone to go hungry, and that SNAP expansion is a bold step to ending hunger in the state. The trick for many households is staying qualified. Farmer says that $2,500 figure is gross monthly income.
The cap had been at 130% of poverty, so there was sort of a cliff at that point where working households could fall off of assistance if they earned, you know, just a dollar more than that limit.
It's like a fragile program. It's like somebody, you know, I mean, if somebody's doing a good job at work and their boss wants to give them a raise, they'd have to decline it, right?
Well, or they'd have to make sacrifices. They may have to skip meals so their kids can have enough to eat. And we want to make sure that people working towards becoming self-sufficient have the supports they need to continue to work and support their families and make sure their children are well fed.
Zimmet points out there could soon be additional benefits for hungry households.
One of the things that we're waiting for right now, with fingers crossed, is that what got passed this legislative session also was a tax credit. So a lot of the extra food that stays in farms could now be donated to food banks and food programs, emergency food feeding programs, and the farmers can get a tax credit. Now, there is a federal tax credit, but it's for very large farms. And so a lot of the farmers on a local level, you know, don't have money to pick up the food and ship it to where it needs to go. But with this tax credit now, they'll be able to do it. So, and more people will now be able to access healthy food between getting the SNAP benefits and between the tax credit, which we hope the governor will be signing very shortly.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
During the Farnborough International Air Show near London this week, Norsk Titanium confirmed that Plattsburgh, New York, has been selected as the location for the world's first industrial-scale high-technology manufacturing plant for titanium aerospace components. The international company will invest $1 billion in a new manufacturing plant and training facility in the northern New York City. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Norsk Titanium created a new method of producing aerospace-grade components by melting titanium wire in an inert argon atmosphere. It results in a 35 to 75% less expensive process with less waste and energy use, according to a video from the Norwegian company.
What we discovered has made us today the world's only qualified aerospace supplier of structural titanium 3D manufactured parts. Our revolutionary approach allows aircraft manufacturers to save millions of dollars on each plane.
New York State approved $125 million for the Norsk Titanium factory in the 2016-17 budget. SUNY Polytechnic has now ordered the first 20 rapid plasma deposition machines to establish baseline production, and the state released an additional $4 million in planning funds for Norsk Titanium to complete the manufacturing facility. Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas has been in Britain operating the New York State booth at the air show. He says Norsk, the state, and officials wanted to take advantage of the premier global aerospace event of the year to spread the word about what Norsk is about to do at Plattsburgh with its cutting-edge technology.
Norsk Titanium is about to transform the way aerospace components are made globally. Their plans for Plattsburgh represent the first industrial-scale 3D production facility for this type of material anywhere in the world. And as we're seeing at Farnborough, has really put Plattsburgh on the international map firmly once and for all.
The Development Corporation has been working with Norsk Titanium on the development of a workforce training facility, which will be separate from the main manufacturing facility. Executive Director Paul Grasso says this is a huge announcement for the North Country and the state.
For a company like Norsk to choose Plattsburgh to build this first-of-a-kind facility is going to send a message to a lot of other people who are looking to locate plants in the U.S. that we not only met all of their economic development needs, but also their workforce development needs. It's a great marketing opportunity along with all of the other things that we've had happen, especially the Foreign Direct Investment magazine naming Plattsburgh as the number two micropolitan city of the future.
Plattsburgh Mayor James Calnon says officials throughout the region have been awaiting the announcement for some time.
This is a big deal. We are an economy that's on the upswing. The whole northeastern corridor of the state is really primed for a lot of development. This will provide jobs and revenue for the region for years to come. The fact that you're going to have 400 jobs in a very viable company here, and one that we believe will attract others in its cluster, is going to have a long-term effect on our economy.
Norsk Titanium will invest $1 billion during the first 10 years of operations. The new facility will be operational by the end of 2017, creating more than 400 new jobs.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The gap between the number of people working in the Hudson Valley and the number of jobs in the region continues to grow. That's according to the latest research from Marist College. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Marist College Bureau of Economic Research Director Dr. Christy Huebner-Caridi authored the report Commutation Trends in the Hudson Valley 2010 to 2014.
Since the onset of the Great Recession, fewer and fewer jobs have been held by Hudson Valley residents in Hudson Valley. So they're commuting outside of the region or commuting outside of their home county. Before the Great Recession, it was about 50-50. Now, at least across the entire region, it's like 56% of residents actually commute to work. Now, most of it, about 25%, is actually interregional. So they're not moving particularly far. It could be someone going to from Orange to Rockland or Orange to Westchester, Putnam to Westchester, that kind of thing.
The report considers a seven-county region, Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester. Huebner-Caridi says the Hudson Valley region is creating fewer jobs than the number of people seeking employment. Huebner-Caridi addresses individual counties.
Basically, in the region, Sullivan and Ulster are the most dependent on Hudson Valley and their home county for work. Westchester is absolutely the least. Westchester is about 50-50, and almost 65% of all their commuting is actually into New York City.
For Dutchess and Ulster counties, the percentages of jobs for these residents outside their counties are 72.5% and 73.6%, respectively. The report also looked at, by age, who is commuting and what portion of the population that could be in the labor force is.
And essentially, with the people between, for the whole Hudson Valley, between 30 and 54, about 69% of all those people in 2014 were actually in the labor force. And they held 54% of all the jobs in the Hudson Valley.
She says the 55 and older segment holding primary jobs continues to increase, and the number of secondary jobs also is increasing. Among the report's other major findings, labor force participation among people age 55 and older increased over the study period, the latest for which data is available, while participation by those aged 29 and younger decreased. Meanwhile, Huebner Caridi looks at an overall continuing trend.
If I look at this in concert with migration data, which we also do for the region, one of the big trends that's been going on since about 98, 99, give or take, is this continual movement from New York City up through the Hudson Valley. During the housing bubble, it was basically New York City to essentially Westchester. Westchester prices would rise, so people from Westchester would move to Rockland. Rockland prices would start to rise. People from Rockland would move to Orange.
And the migration from New York would continue further away from the city to northern Hudson Valley counties. Huebner Caridi says in any given year, the Hudson Valley region is gaining households from New York City, but there is no way to tell whether these households are still commuting to the city for work. Huebner Caridi says anecdotal evidence points to some residents new to the Hudson Valley with jobs in New York City, who switched to telecommuting and reducing to a few days a week their commute, becoming more involved in their communities. There's a second effect.
Because so many people have moved up here from New York City, many people have bought second homes, not primary. So many of these communities are now servicing this New York City population, even if they only come up on the weekend. So it's pushing up costs in the area.
And this, she says, makes it more difficult for residents to live on Hudson Valley incomes as the cost of living rises faster than wages. In summary, New York City is, by far, the largest source of jobs for Hudson Valley residents outside their home region, with Long Island, Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York's Capital Region also providing significant numbers of jobs.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1629, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.